Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of April, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Dan Zwicker is out of the office today and tomorrow, of course. The CME Group is closed and there will be no market trade, though there is a very special edition of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week for you on Friday. More on that a bit later. Later in this program, we'll talk with Daryl Good about the Tuesday USDA reports. He's a little more happy about them than most. You'll find out more as we discuss those reports with him and his outlook for the coming growing season. And as we wrap it up, we'll discuss the weather forecast, speaking of outlooks, with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers as they finished in Chicago on this last trading day of the week. No numbers as a reminder. Tomorrow on Friday, they're closed for a good Friday. Corn futures in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon were up 4¾ cents at $3.86½. July at $3.94½, up 4½. And September today at $4.01¾, up 4 cents. December contract 3¾ higher at $4.10½. May beans at $9.86, down 3¾. July $9.91. And a quarter, down 3¼, and the August at $9.91, down 3 cents. September at $9.80½, unchanged. In November beans, $9.74¼, up 1½ cents. Bean meal at $3.27.30, down 4.60, and the bean oil at $31.04, 35 cents higher for the day. Chicago soft red winter wheat up 7¾ at $5.36¼ in the May. July at $5.35¾, up 6¼ for the day. Hard red at $5.82¾, up 10¾. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the April contract $1.25 higher at $163 and a nickel, and June at $153.32½, up $1.10 per 100 pounds. Feeder cattle at $220.35, up $1.72½, and the April and the May at $217.37½. Up 72½ cents. And the lean hogs in Chicago, $63.40. The final price for the April up 50 cents. The May down 72½ at $68.47½. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil is down 94 cents at $49.15 a barrel. The heating oil or diesel fuel, 6½ cents lower at $1.68¼. And gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $1.76 even. That's down 7½ cents. Natural gas for the day at $2.71, 10½ cents higher. And ethanol futures are up about 0.8 cents as they finished out the day at $1.56¾. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 53 points higher, 17,668. The last trade on the gold around $1,200 even, $7.50 lower, and the dollar indexed down 0.795 at 97.68. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers, some thunderstorms, cloudy, a high of 67. On a west-northwest wind at 11 to 17 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall set at 60% for this afternoon, likely this evening as well. We'll continue with that 60% chance. Cloudy and a low of 48 tonight. Winds out of the north at 3 to 8. And then on Friday, more showers. Cloudy and a high of 52. We'll continue with the north winds at 7 to 13. Friday night, mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear. A low of 30 degrees. Northwest winds at 6 to 13. And finally, on Saturday, sunny skies, not quite as warm, a high of 55, west-southwest winds by then at 5 to 13, gusting to 16 miles an hour. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
On this Thursday afternoon, let's turn our attention directly to the marketplace. Dan Zwicker is out of the office. Mike Zuzlow is here. That's good news because we wouldn't get a chance to talk to him on Good Friday because the markets are closed. Mike, thanks so much for filling in today. I do appreciate it. I want you to start in one of your favorite places, and that's with the grains and wheat in particular. Tell me about the trade there for the day.
You know, a big shift in the weekly chart here at the end of this week. And like you said, holiday shortened week. And I think it was really triggered by the dollar breaking back below its 10-day moving average, Todd. And we saw the wheat corn lead month spread gain back in favor of the wheat about 36% since last week, or the final day of trade on Friday of last week. And so that gave the wheat in the July contract the ability to close up 4%. It gave the lead month soft red wheat the ability to close within a nickel of last week's high, took last week's high out on a trade basis, and really changed the look technically and I think fundamentally of the wheat market, to the point where even with the big corn acres and the big corn stocks, we saw the corn also want to come in and find some short covering. The dollar, I think, opened the door to the trade being able to trade weather, and that's wet weather for the soft red wheat country, dry weather for the hard red wheat country, and also wet weather for the Delta and the southern Corn Belt country. And I think that's probably the primary hallmark or trademark of today's trade, if you would ask me.
Is this a hard red winter wheat problem that is being infused into the soft red, and does that create problems at all for the soft red producers east of the Mississippi River?
I think it creates production problems and quality problems. I mean, keep in mind, this morning, before the midday models came out, Cairo, Illinois, was looking at 8 inches of rain on the GFS 10-day map. Now, the afternoon models really pulled that back to about 3 inches. But I think it really gave the trade the idea that the big areas that really make the national yield for and the high-quality yields for soft red wheat were going to just get inundated because it was going to be the Ohio River Valley that was going to get nailed so bad. Wheat in the hard red country, though, is a separate problem. It's a problem that I think is more production, not necessarily quality, but production. If we don't see rains and we see the kind of temperatures these models are reflecting, mid-80s going into the 1st of April and the middle of April, I think there's a real chance that some producers in Kansas, western Oklahoma, and even southern Nebraska may look at tearing some hard red wheat up in favor of some other type of row crop like a soybean or like a sunflower or like maybe possibly milo sorghum.
Yeah, that was my next question, is if they tear it up, are they more likely to go, if they're especially if they're under drier conditions, to sorghum than anything else? And that would really put some extra acres, I would think, into the sorghum market, though apparently it might be able to absorb some.
Yeah, and I think this is where if we don't get the Delta corn acres that we need and we don't get the southern Corn Belt, and what I mean by that is you get down into the Boot Hill of Missouri and you get to the Memphis, Tennessee area where some good corn can be grown with good weather, and we saw that last year. You know, you think of the southern third of Illinois as maybe not the best of the state, but last year they indeed were the best of the state because it just kept raining and they had no stress. And so you get those areas, though, that don't get you the acres that you probably need here, and then you start talking about maybe cash basis coming in for milo and sorghum and corn for the early crop that would support planting something like that even as far west as out here. And, you know, the other thing that I think the trade probably keyed in on a little bit, again because of the dollar breaking back, was the idea that maybe we've got the biggest corn acres that we're going to see, and maybe we've got the smallest bean acres we're going to see. And you brought that up at the Springfield meeting this week, and I thought that was a real germane point based upon this model and how the weather's shaking out now.
Well, it'll be interesting to follow it. One other note on the sorghum. How important is it to recognize that this is a feed grain, but it's truly a feed grain, unlike the wheat, where we often don't think, at least in the United States, of it as being a feed grain, and the impact that it might have on the corn market in itself, because there are a lot of acres of sorghum this year.
There are, and the key will be that China continues to purchase it. You know, what we saw was them back away from the MIR 162 corn and go to the DDGs. They backed away from the DDGs, and then they went to the Milo. One of the worst things that could happen here is the Chinese decide to go back to the corn and stray away from the Milo, and then the cash basis would then, theoretically, the bottom would kind of fall out because of those acres you're talking about being so large.
Okay, hey, thanks so much.
Have a happy Easter, Todd.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. Just a quick reminder that the markets are closed tomorrow, so no trade in Chicago at the CME Group. However, the closing market report and Commodity Week are both already recorded and will air. If you'd like to hear them, you can at their usual times on our radio station here. The closing market report, a special program, a repeat of last week's Commodity Week, because a listener had asked if he could hear the last part of that program. You didn't hear it on the air, but if you were able to get to it on the web, you have already. A great discussion about the commodity markets and how trade takes place in Chicago, the algorithms and the black box trading. So if you'd like to hear that with Dan Zwicker and Roy Huckabee, along with Ellen Dearden and the man we just heard, Mike Zuzulo, you can in Closing Market Report tomorrow afternoon on Friday. It will be followed immediately by a brand new Commodity Week. I spoke with John Bondurant a bit earlier in this week, and we'll have all of his discussion on the marketplace during Commodity Week. Those are both two great programs that come to you Friday afternoon. The markets are closed, so no update on the trade in Chicago, but a really good hour review of agricultural commodities right here from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Speaking of good agricultural reviews, I spoke earlier in this week with Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois, about the Tuesday reports from the United States Department of Agriculture. We started by going through the important numbers in his mind.
I think four numbers we want to look at, Todd, the March 1 stocks of corn and soybeans, and of course the March planting intentions for those two crops as well. March 1 corn stocks estimated at 7.745 billion bushels. That's up about 10% from stocks of a year ago and about 130, 140 million more than the market was looking for. Soybean stocks, 1.334 billion. That's up about a third from where we were last year, but about what the market expected. On planting intentions, corn at 89.2 million acres. Down 1.4 million from what we planted last year, but a bit more than the market was looking for. Soybean plantings at 84.6 million acres. That's only up about 900,000 acres from last year and considerably smaller than the increase the market was looking for. So taken together, you say the surprises were friendly for soybeans and on the surface kind of negative for corn prices.
You have a somewhat different take for the corn numbers, though.
I think there is some uncertainty here, Todd. I think taken at face value, the corn stocks number implies less feed and residual use of corn during the second quarter and certainly the first half of the marketing year than what the trade was looking for. That total feed and residual use is about 69% of the USDA's projection for the year of 5.3 million. In the last 4 years, first half feed use has been 74%. So if the market assumes that what we've seen so far is in fact 74% of the total, then the 5.3 billion is probably not reachable. But if you look at the history prior to the last 4 years, which in my mind have been very unique in terms of the production problems we've had, the price level of corn, the contraction in livestock numbers, the history prior to that says that first quarter feed and residual, or first half feed and residual use of corn has been more in the 65 to 68% range. And if in fact we're on that path this year, then 5.3 billion bushels is still very reachable. In fact, we might even do a bit more than 5.3, given the expansion in livestock numbers that we're seeing right now. Broiler numbers up 3 to 4%. The spring pig crop, winter pig crop up 7% from last year. So core feed demand should be very, very robust the last half of the marketing year. But clearly that's not the way the market interpreted it. I think the market is looking for USDA to lower its feed and residual projection in the April WASDE report and increase the projection of year-ending stocks. And on the acreage side, while we did see a cut in corn acres, I think that was mostly offset by increases in intentions for other feed grains. So that's a bit of a wash, kind of disappointing to the market.
So the marketplace said 18 cents lower, at least at the moment. And I suppose I wasn't really thinking about the next WASDE or the April report, which isn't very far away, giving us a real milestone at this point as to whether USDA is thinking the feed and residual number is on track or not.
Right. It's going to be very important in terms of what they say and how the market takes that number. Personally, I wouldn't be surprised that the WASDE number is a bit lower in the April report. Maybe they'll come down 100 million bushels on their projection of feed and residual use and put all of that into the projected year-ending stocks number. So I think that's the way the market is leaning. And we really, unfortunately, won't get another real read on that until we get the June stocks report 3 months from now. So between now and then, it's all going to be about new crop, how the spring goes and planting progress. And that's going to dominate prices rather than old crop feed use, I think.
Two items on the new crop, on acreage and its relationship. It appears that there's a whole number of new acres of corn that are going into Iowa and certainly into Minnesota. And then, because the survey was taken, I think, starting February the 24th, do you suppose intentions and actuals may have changed in the Delta region?
You know, what we do know historically is that actual plantings do, on occasion, differ substantially from March intentions. In both directions for both crops. I suspect that there has been some slight change in intentions since the survey was done, given the weather patterns that we've seen in the Delta area, been a bit wet. The increase we're seeing in corn acres in most states, I think, reflects the fact that acreage has come down quite a bit the last 2 years in those states. So maybe some just rebuilding there back to a more normal rotation. I think it's an important point you make that this is a benchmark, this is a starting point on estimating planted acres, harvested acres, and size of the crop, but certainly it's not the final information that we will have in making that forecast crop size.
Explore the soybean acreage and grain stocks figure for me, please.
First, on the soybean stocks, it's interesting that the number was very close to the market expectation, but what it reveals is a record feed and seed and residual use of soybeans during the first half of the marketing year, a record by a large margin over what we've seen in the past, 70 million bushels, more residual use of soybeans in the first half of the marketing year than we've seen in the past. So I'm surprised the market was as close as it was on its expectation. And so the question is, what does that mean? It means one of two things. Either we will see a very large negative residual use of soybeans in the last half of the marketing year, as has become typical, but it would have to be, again, record large negative use in the last 6 months of the marketing year, or we will see some lowering of last year's production estimate on soybeans. Unfortunately, the history of first half residual use of soybeans is not well correlated to the subsequent change in the crop estimate. It's almost statistically zero correlation there. But this large of a residual number, the way I put it, does hint at the possibility that last year's soybean crop was overestimated a bit. Bottom line, it doesn't really matter. I mean, stocks are what they are, and that's what we'll work with from here forward. The acreage number, again, at 84.6 million acres, many people had looked for a much larger number. I think had lost track of the fact that we had increased soybean acres substantially the last 2 years, and you would have to think that would mute the change that we would expect this year. A bit of that decline as well, or a bit of the increase, is offset by some change in acreage of other oil seeds, but not much. So that number on the surface relative to expectations should have been a very friendly number, but again, the price response was fairly muted.
Tomorrow morning, you and John Newton, along with Scott Irwin, are scheduled to do a webinar on the Farm Doc Daily website. People can still sign up for that. I think it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning.
8 o'clock, yes.
You're going to talk about pricing.
We're going to start by looking at these numbers in a little bit of detail and tracing through what it means for the balance sheet on corn and soybeans for old crop. And then, more importantly, we want to take a look at the implications of the acreage intentions for the new crop balance sheet for the 15-16 marketing year. And again, we'll underscore the fact that the acreage intentions are a starting point, but if we want to trace through the implications, if we do plant what we said we're going to plant and we harvest a normal percentage of that planted acres and we have a trend yield, what does the next year's balance sheet look like, and what does that mean for the average price of corn and soybeans in the upcoming marketing year?
Can I have you give us a preview?
I think directionally we would be pointing to higher corn prices next year than what we averaged this year, and conversely lower soybean prices.
How much lower?
It's a kind of a delicate thing to forecast. There's a lot of things that go into that, but I would guess it will be 50 cents lower next year than we are this year on soybeans. And on corn, I think we could be 50 cents higher next year than we have been this year.
Thanks so much, Darrell.
Thank you.
Of course, that's Darrell Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. And that webinar took place earlier in the week. You can catch up with it on the Farm Doc Daily website and at farmdoc.illinois.edu. Let's take a look at these numbers that have been trading today in the cash grain market with Matt Bennett. He's now on the phone line from Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for taking the time with us. Have you moved at all in the field where you live?
We've put a little bit of anhydrous on some pattern tiled fields. Just a couple of them are ready to go. It's anything that doesn't have a full system seems to be pushing it. But, some of it that's tiled is actually, it went on really nice. So we've been able to do a little bit, but, we're still kind of itching.
Yeah, itching, but it's still early and waiting around. What did you think of the USDA reports earlier in the week?
Well, I definitely found them interesting. I would say that I was thinking that the corn acreage might be off just a little bit more than that based upon the things that I've witnessed. I've also, thought that as far as soybeans were, I know so many people that are in the seed business that have ran out of the soybean numbers they're selling. So I know there's a lot of demand to plant beans this year. Of course, the input prices being where they're at, we've talked about that before. You know, I think that the market hasn't done a lot to attract the acreage that maybe we might need. And so I think that'll be the largest corn number we see unless we just have ideal weather this spring.
And does that tell me that you think we'll have a higher corn price later in the year, and by how much?
You know, I think that we're going to get a good chance to sell, some fall corn basis, the Dease, at 450 and higher on some weather issues later on. I know right now that seems, like a little bit, a little ways away, but keep in mind, we only settled 4 cents lower on the week, whenever the numbers came out there on Tuesday, everyone was in panic mode full on. So we need to keep in mind that there still is a need to go ahead and have a good crop. And we can't turn our back to the fact that everyone in the world is really talking about a little bit less, corn seedings, just simply because of the same reasons we are, lack of profitability.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us. That,
yes, thanks,
of course,
Todd.
Is Matt Bennett. He's with Windsor, or in Windsor, Illinois. Back in 2 minutes.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. There does not seem to be any references to PBJs before 1940, But in World War II, soldiers were given rations of both peanut butter and jelly. When the war was over and GIs returned to the States, sales of peanut butter and jelly soared. By the way, the first known cookbook that contains recipes for fruit preserves was written in 14 AD. Peanut butter was invented in 1890, almost 1900 years later. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, the periodical American Farmer was founded by John Skinner. Begun as a weekly in Baltimore, the stated purpose of the periodical was to collect information from every source on every branch of husbandry. Skinner edited American Farmer for a decade before selling the magazine in 1830. By the way, the earliest issues also included a sports column, often focusing on horses and hounds. In 1863, the Richmond Bread Riots broke out. Shortages of food caused hundreds of angry women to march on Richmond, Virginia, and then on the governor's office, and then on the government commissary. It ended in a riot when they broke into the commissary and then other shops and buildings and carried out anything they could carry. Even the hospital reported losing over 300 pounds of beef. In 1872, George Brayton received a patent for the U.S. commercial gasoline engine. Its principle of continuous ignition later became the basis for the turbine engine. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Mike Tenor to take a look at the weather forecast, mostly for this nation, as we transition from winter into the spring months. And I think, Mike, we should start in the hard red wheat growing regions of the United States. They had a difficult time with that crop to begin with, and things have not gotten better. It remains fairly dry in the plains. Is this right?
If you look at Kansas, they produce around 40% of the U.S.'s hard red winter wheat crop. March out there was very dry. It was the 12th driest in 121 years of record across the state of Kansas. So just that alone right there tells you that you do have a dryness issue developing. If you expand out a little bit further and go back in time, there wasn't a whole lot of rain earlier either. The big rain event in that region was on January 31st, when a fairly major rain event and snow event hit a large portion of the hard red winter wheat belt. While that is moving further into the past and we're starting to need rain, keep in mind the temperatures yesterday were very warm, well into the 80s across a big chunk of the plains, and we also had gusty winds. This has been a common theme of the last 1 to 2 months, where we have these temperatures that just soar to levels that are pretty amazing for this time of the year, around 20 degrees above normal. And when you start to see that and you combine that with dry conditions, we start to look for the need for rain. As we go forward, there are rain chances out there, but none of them are very good. The real problem is that even though we do have a number of systems that will move across the plains, we don't have a lot of humidity available for each system to produce rain. So what you end up with is a low chance for rain throughout the next 10 to 14 days, but you never have a good chance for rain. The good chances for rain are always off to the east. If this forecast verifies, then we'll definitely be talking about a drought out in the plains. But again, we still have some time to get out of this situation. Just at the moment, those rain chances aren't as ideal as we would like.
And what do you think it means for the wheat crop?
Well, for the wheat crop, if you look at last year, Kansas had its lowest wheat yield on record, at least since 1995. So 20 years ago is the lowest wheat yield compared to last year. The reason we mentioned last year is that it was very dry at that time of the year, too, almost as dry as right now. So we know that if you get dry weather now, you can get a low yield. But again, it has to last. If we get a big rain, say in 5 days from now, unexpectedly, then the tune would change. But at the moment, it doesn't look like that rain is coming.
And speaking of big rains, it has been wet in other parts of the nation. The Delta has not gotten a good start to their planting season, and they should have by now been rolling maybe more completely than they have. The Ohio River Valley has been spot on for rainfall. What do you see there?
Well, that's the other side of the coin. we have all of these systems coming across the plains, but remember, there's no humidity out there. While there will be a lot of humidity across the Corn Belt and Delta as we see a southerly wind flow in place that will transport tropical air far to the north, that will interact with those systems, produce rain, and we're looking for widespread coverage of heavy rainfall across the far southern Corn Belt and the northern Delta right along that Ohio River Valley, where we've seen a lot of heavy rain in the last several weeks and several months. So down there, we could be talking about flooding, and we think that's a fairly high probability for at least some field flooding. And again, like you noted, we should be planting corn over the next couple of weeks. But if this forecast verifies or continues to verify, we just don't think that we'll be able to see the rapid rates of planting that we'd like.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois.